It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Two of the biggest stories in the city this year have dealt with temporary art installations. The yarn bombing of the Andy Warhol Bridge and the recent rubber duck display at Point State Park both garnered a lot of attention. However, outside of news stories, how do these temporary public displays impact the city's bottom line? Here to answer that question is our business contributor, Rebecca Harris, director of the Center for Women's Entrepreneurship at Chatham University. Rebecca, welcome back. How are you?
I'm great. It's nice to see you again, Paul.
Let's talk a little about what temporary public art is.
Okay.
What are we talking about here?
So what we're really talking about is very ephemeral art. It sometimes lasts a couple weeks. Sometimes it's just a couple of hours. Temporary street art installations are usually very colorful. They're engaging. They are really huge additions to ever-evolving urban settings. But sometimes they're so subtle, you might not even see them. There was tiny little sculptures of men in puddles in New York City, very small. And they were really hard to see, and so you had to know what you were looking for. Others are impossible to miss, like the huge yellow rubber duck, which I actually saw from an airplane as I flew in the other day. So,
what did that look like?
So great!
Like, we're really close to that little pond down there, aren't we?
It was like unbelievable. We have several stadiums, and we have the point, and then we have this huge yellow rubber duck. It was really great. So, it really is a matter of what you look at, and then you see things like the yarn bomb. Or think about the magnificent orange tangerine gates. Remember those in Central Park in 2005? Those were put up by Christo and Jean-Claude. They were 1 million square feet of nylon fabric, 5,000 tons of steel, 60 miles of vinyl tubing, and they were yellow, beautiful, swinging, almost like flags. They were called the gates. And so that's another example of a temporary exhibit. I just read about another one in New York, which I did not see. I saw the gates, which was a temporary man-made waterfall on the East River. That was last June, and it went through October by a gentleman named Ellison, and it was 100-foot towers of cascading water that he put together. It was lit up so it would look like fluorescent blue and purple. And the point was that these outdoor public arts that are temporary are really meant to break up the monotonous of an urban environment. They are made to really help us understand and look at things differently. And usually what happens, and when I looked up some official definitions, it's usually a government-sponsored or funded artwork created by or with professional artists. It's legally cited, so you can't just go throw something up in a public place. And they're in publicly accessible venues, whether it's either in the street or a garden or in a federal building or in a river or on a bridge. So that's really what we talk about when we talk about that subject.
So why do cities take on these types of projects, which seem costly and also utilize public resources?
They definitely do. I mean, we had to really guard our duck. If you thought you were going to go swim with the duck, you were wrong, because they had a lot of security around the duck and people couldn't just get into the water and swim with the duck.
And you have to pay for that.
Yes, you definitely have to pay for that. But here's a couple things. The public arts and these kind of temporary exhibits not only spur economic development, but they also in a lot of ways shape our consciousness. They create sort of a collective attitude. They inspire us. They sort of remake behavior. They reduce stress. And they really provide a new way to experience a city. And I think that's really important, because it makes us feel like a community. When you saw the people who were at the duck, I went this past Saturday, it was everybody. It wasn't there was no political orientation, there was no sports connotation. It was just masses of people looking at a duck. And I think that's really important to remember. On the economic side, though, even though they're very costly, for example, the New York waterfalls cost the city about $15 million. But they brought in, according to the Public Art Fund, $69 million to the city.
So you're spending money to make money.
You are. And when we talk about following the money, there you go.
And the duck, it's amazing. I mean, I'm just listening to you talk about it. It reflects how a lot of people feel. But were you at all surprised at how this just became the biggest story in this city.
It really did. I think I read one quote by the Pittsburgh Cultural Trust, the vice president, saying that they thought maybe 200 or 300 people a day. I mean, they had no idea that it was really going to take off the way they did. I think that they thought it would. But so when we look at that duck, for those of you who didn't see it, you can certainly see lots of pictures and video. We have lots of links on the WESA website.
But it was, yes, we do.
Yes, we do. It was a four-story, free-floating yellow duck by the Dutch artist Florentine, and I might not have said his first name correctly, Hoffman. And it was part of the Pittsburgh Cultural Trust Festival of Firsts. So it arrived on September 27th. It was actually made its American debut on the Allegheny that first night. It was part of the Cultural District Gallery Crawl, which is really fun. And it kicked off this festival first, and it closed at 11 p.m. on Sunday, and it was towed away. It was deflated. I think there was Twitter feed, like, keep the duck here. It had its own Facebook and Twitter following. It was built on a 14,000-pound steel pontoon. So it was deflated, it was cleaned, and it's being stored. But it was always set up to be a temporary exhibit. It was never set up to be a long-term lasting exhibit. And I think that was some of its novelty. I really do.
True, but you could almost see that thing staying here and becoming a part of, like, the submarine by the Science Center,
yeah.
Just being a part of the tapestry here.
It really could. Now, I don't know how it would weather the winter. I'm not sure about it. It, depending on the type of rubber and all the things that went along with it, and that's a really good question. But the Pittsburgh Cultural Trust, when I reached out to them this morning, they said they're currently gathering all the data on the duck and the visitors and the final economic impact. But reports are in that over 1 million people visited the duck, and the exhibit led to tens of millions of dollars in direct spending within the city of Pittsburgh.
So whatever the costs were to guard the duck, to escort the duck,
to inflate and deflate the duck, right?
Yeah, whatever those were, they were more than offset, you think?
Absolutely. And that isn't even to mention all the things that were happening downtown, like duck menus. Remember? I mean, I don't know if you heard about all these amazing duck dishes that were being put
on. Did Pimenti start making a duck sandwich with French fries on it?
I mean, it was amazing. All these special. There was there were things like quackages versus packages from the hotels. The restaurants and hotels were offering these features. There were stickers. There were magnets. There were downtown storefronts. There were decals. There were T-shirts. There were caps. It really went on and on.
This really quacks me up.
Oh, there you go, Paul. But it really, metaphorically, I think, and part of what I read from the artist was that everybody can identify with taking a bath with a rubber duck. I mean, it really brings on that we're all living in one planet, all global waters become your bathtub. I mean, that was some of what the artist actually envisioned, and it reminds you of your childhood.
Well, what about all those geese on the river, you know, that hang out down by the point? I mean, what do you think
they
were
happy.
Really?
I think they really liked it.
Oh, you think so? Okay.
Yeah.
I was wondering if maybe they were confused, you know. Like,
No, I think they were very happy. And it was really an undertaking, too, because it really it was the first time it was here in the United States. It had appeared in other foreign countries. It's a custom-made one for our city because it had to get underneath the West End and Fort Duquesne bridges. So,
and also had the gold color, too, like a lot of our teams.
Yeah.
So that's part of the custom.
I don't know. I think they are all that color. That is the color of a duck.
Maybe not. Yeah. Well, some of them. Yeah, sure. Well, okay. On to from the duck to the yarn bomb.
All right.
How did this start? Who was the sponsor, and did it have long-term impact?
I think this was so fascinating, and I remember walking across the Andy Warhol Bridge, which is where it was put up, to a baseball game, and just being, again, visually stunned by the magnitude of the art, and it was so beautiful, and all the different squares and fabric, and so it was Pittsburgh Knits the Bridge project was headed up by the Fiber Arts Guild of Pittsburgh with help from the Pittsburgh Center for the Arts. It was funded by more than $100,000 in donations, including more than $20,000 that was raised on crowdfunding site Indiegogo, which was great. And there was support, of course, from the Allegheny County. And it it really changed the essence of what it was like to see that bridge. And I think, again, it was another one of these things where you just driving downtown and all of a sudden you see this bridge filled with yarn art and you're thinking, what is it? It was the largest yarn bomb in the United States to date. So I think that is pretty neat.
And so would you say Pittsburgh's good at this?
I think we're actually pretty amazing at it. I think Pittsburgh has really reinvented itself in so many different ways. And one of the neat things about the Knit the Bridge project that all the panels, once they were taken down, were commercially laundered and distributed to shelters. So we really made use of the actual product. And I think that's pretty amazing.
Nothing goes to waste.
Yes, yes. We do a great job at what we do.
And so do you. Rebecca Harris, Director of the Center for Women's Entrepreneurship at Chatham University, our business correspondent. Thank you so much for being with us.
Okay, nice to see you, Paul.
And thanks for listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. You can catch the entire show online at WESA.FM or as a podcast in iTunes. And we welcome your comments and your story ideas. You can submit those to ESSPGH at WESA.FM. Again, your comments and story ideas at ESSPGH at WESA.FM. Tomorrow, we'll visit with the founders of the Found Footage Festival, hilarious clips coming to Pittsburgh and the Regent Square. Until then, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Thanks for listening. This is 90.5 WESA, Pittsburgh's NPR news station.